Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. TNCs apply.
And we are live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm one of your co-hosts, Blake Ruffino. Alongside me is my counterpart and co-host, Joe DeLeon. Good evening, good sir. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Blake. I got to be honest with you. We kind of said this to each other pre-show, but then we got so entrenched with talking about all the crap that's been happening. This has to be one of the wildest week zero lead-ups that I can recall.
We're
talking about so much stuff that is not even about football. Can the games just kick off? Can the games just kick off already? I'm over this. I'm so over this. This week sucks. It's Monday.
Trust me, if there's anybody that understands where you're coming from, trust me, I know where you're coming from. We do need the ball does need to get kicked off. I do think it would settle down a lot of this, but at the same time, when will the NCAA learn? I mean, you have Lane Kiffin, you have Ryan Day, you have Kalen DeBoer, you have massive coaches coming out there and saying, hey, bro, I mean, this is all in press conferences today. You tried to screw the kids over, and if we have access to 2022 kids, we're going to go and get them. I know that this is the face with, I guess we're kind of getting out a little bit ahead of ourselves, but as Matt Zenitz and I both reported today on the simple nature of LSU yet again, going in and grabbing another player from, I guess, Joe, technically the transfer portal, and going and getting Xavier Harris, Matt Zenitz and myself reporting, I guess, you have multiple coaches saying it. So, I think you're doing your team a disservice if you are not trying to make your team the best as humanly possible. So, Joe, let me just tell you this right now. I can tell you this for a fact. Here you go. Sources, this has just begun. Yeah. If you think that this is even close to being over, it's not remotely close to being over. So I expect even more lawsuits to hit tomorrow and Wednesday and Thursday. And Joe, this will continue for this 2022 class. I get it. But look, it's going to continue for probably this week, and hopefully Saturday kind of gets this season ship rolling and off we go. But it is not going to stop with Xavier Harris here.
No, and I mean, we already have seen UCLA added a kid from JMU who was, I forget if he got cut or not, but like UCLA added a kid today. There's going to be other schools. It's not just LSU. It was still misconstrued in people that were listening live and also people that were hopping in the comments. It is what it is. People have their own way of interpreting information the way they choose to. It's not an LSU problem. It's not a Lane Kiffin problem. It's not a Daquan Wright problem. It is an issue with the NCAA and for their mishandling of all of this. This is one of the few circumstances that the NCAA created their own mess, and they're sitting in it. Why are we sitting here yelling and complaining and directing our anger towards the specific schools that are bringing these players in? They're not the ones that are the villains. It is the inept institution that is responsible for running, I put that in air quotes even, because they barely run it anymore, college athletics. So, yeah, I can be honest with you, I almost don't even care as soon as these guys start signing and joining these rosters because I know it's coming. I just look at the graphic on Twitter and go, huh, okay, when's the next one? It doesn't mean anything to me. Most of these guys aren't going to play.
Probably later tonight.
Mm-hmm. Oh, do you have information on one coming later tonight?
Okay. Yeah, probably later tonight or early tomorrow morning.
Well then.
I mean, do you want me to just tell you the truth? I mean, probably later tonight or early tomorrow morning. I mean, it's going to continue.
I believe you.
Look, I mean, LSU, I thought Lane said it the best. So wait a minute. You don't want me to make my roster as best as humanly possible? So let me just get this straight. Ryan Day included said the same exact thing, but Ryan Day's comments didn't go viral. Ryan Day said, I would probably want to fire me if I didn't try to make my roster as best as humanly possible. I mean, this coach is Joe. I mean, for whatever it's worth, I've disagreed with them. This is not one of the things that I disagree with them on. Every college coach runs out there and says, I want playoff expansion. Of course they want playoff expansion. I mean, we're asking the coaches to lead college football and thinking that they're not going to do things that best benefit them so that they get more money and they get wins. I mean, like, I don't technically understand it.
Yeah, this is why I'm so tired of talking about it.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about it. I mean,
I know we're not. I just mostly am pointing out that none of this, we're complaining to complain because it's the main headline of the week, and it's the same argument that we've been having, but with a different outer appearance that we've been having for the past like 6 months about the NCAA's problem. So I'm just going to reiterate what I said at the beginning of the show. I want the season to start. I want football to happen. Yeah, no. So then we can be distracted for the entire season.
You don't have to for long. I mean, if you're an FCS fan, you have until Thursday, and it will be here for you. So college football is right around the corner. We got lots that we need to talk about here tonight. Yes, Xavier Harris is committed and going to LSU. Go see everything that we would say about last night. We already talked about that. But Matt Zenitz and I did confirm that he is going to be heading to LSU. But we have a couple of quarterback battles, Joe, that have come to the forefront. FaZe and Brandon, Aaron Filo both win the jobs collectively at Tennessee and Florida. We will talk about those. We have some camp intel that we need to get into, and we could not get to Boise State versus Oregon last night. We will wrap up tonight's show talking about them. So we got lots that we need to get into here tonight. But before we get rolling, do us a favor by hitting the like and share. Subscribe down below if you're on YouTube. It's the only thing that Joe and I are going to ask for you throughout the time here tonight. So do us a favor. Hit the subscribe button down below. Very close. Maybe we have gotten there. I hadn't paid attention. Very close to 33,000 subs. We're trying to get to that 40,000 mark as the season goes on. So hit that subscribe button and notification bell. We greatly appreciate you doing that. Wherever you listen to podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe. We greatly appreciate you doing that as well. We need to talk about our partners through the college football season, our good friends over at Kalshi. Who's going to win the SEC or the Big Ten? Who's going to hold the trophy up at the end of the season? On Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform, you can trade predictions in a live market. On Kalshi, you're trading against peers in a live market, meaning that there is no house. As the probability changes, you can buy in and out of your position, trade the draft pick, the game, and much more on Kalshi. Download the Kalshi app and use the promo code RJS to get $10 in bonus credits when you trade $10. You must be 18 years or older to join. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. And if you have more thoughts, questions, or concerns, go over to kalshi.com/regulatory for more details. All right, Joe, we got lots that we need to get into here as Florida and Tennessee have both named their starting quarterbacks. Let's go out to Knoxville first. Joe, probably the loudest unkept secret this offseason. I know me and you have talked about this a lot over the offseason. But Faison Brandon, who was the number three quarterback in last year's class, ironically the number three overall prospect on 24/7 Sports. You need to go over there to get all of your camp and in-season intel over at 24/7 Sports. But Faison Brandon is going to be the starting quarterback for Tennessee come week one. I know that you are probably not shocked by this, Joe, but what are your thoughts in Brandon getting the nod in Knoxville?
Yeah, there's a couple things I want to get into with discussing FaZe and Brandon winning this job. I think just not to rehash the same talking point that I had with Keevan Russell, this upside for starting FaZe and Brandon is immense. He's a very gifted player. He was highly recruited for a reason. While it might not have the immediate hit the ground running impact that you'd like for an experienced player who's been in a system for a couple of years, the upside once he adds those reps and gets better and feels more comfortable, it's going to be worth it in the long run in 2027. What's going to happen this upcoming year remains to be seen on how quickly he can get acclimated. But there were a couple of things that I found over at Go Vols 247 that, or 24/7 rather, that made me excited about FaZe and Brandon taking over. The first was from Patrick Brown, who noted Brandon added 10 pounds when he joined the team in the spring. He added another 10 pounds in the summer, and it was reported, like, focused on that this was 19 and a half pounds of lean mass that he added. And even if, when you're a high school quarterback, and he wasn't like a big kid, like even if he added a little bit of fat, that would have been fine because you need weight to play quarterback in the SEC. But we're talking about a kid who went from 200 pounds to 225 roughly is what he's now sitting at. And that was like the first big thing for me that caught my attention, because you never get a tidbit like this with a kid winning a job. You usually hear, oh, X, Y, and Z, they stood out. That requires some really intense focus to put on that much weight. I feel like he is made of the right stuff to take hold of this quarterback situation and to lead this offense this year and produce better results than maybe people are anticipating. I mean, heck, you had a quote from TK Keys that pointed out that his ball has more zip on it, more speed on it than when he started out with the program when he joined in the spring. He's gotten stronger. He has been very intentional about what he needed to improve upon. Blake, I'm excited for what Brandon brings to the table, but there's obviously a million other questions that are attached to this because he's a true freshman and Josh Heupel is trying to navigate a very complex circumstance, turning the page to a true freshman.
Okay. So what do you consider success? Is it wins or losses? Is it that he starts off at a certain spot and gets better? You know, like, I'll give an example. I do think that there were moments for even guys like Bryce Underwood a year ago. I mean, yes, we look at the Texas game and look at the interceptions late. Joe, he was pretty phenomenal until he started turning the ball over, right? Like, he was pretty phenomenal. He's pretty good at what he was doing before, like, going through the whole season. We saw glimpses. We saw flashes. We saw a lot of things from even guys like him. Now, I do think that Brandon with Josh Heupel is in a much better system offensively and a much better situation. He's going to have a better offensive line. With Bishop and company, he's probably going to have a better overall run game. Schedule is a little bit tougher. But he probably, more than Underwood, is set up in a better position to have success. But I ask, is he put in the best situation to succeed? Tennessee fans did something, and I got to give them a lot of credit for. Joe, when you and I talked about the Nico Iamalava situation, we said, listen, you're praising Josh Heupel for kicking him loose, but you are not in a great spot at the quarterback position at the current moment. Like, you kicked him loose. You and Joey Aguilar, you wind up switching. Joey Aguilar's not a great quarterback. And if he doesn't return, which Joey Aguilar did not, either you're going to have to start a redshirted freshman in McIntyre, or you're going to have to start a freshman quarterback in Faze and Brandon. The departure of Nico Iamalava is going to make you reset and have to rebuild that room unless you got somebody from the portal, which they tried to do this offseason and missed. So what is success will be the question for me if I'm a Tennessee fan. What will be success if I'm on the national landscape? Because I don't even really look at Bryce Underwood, and I have said this, I don't think he's Cam Newton as some have tried to compare him to. Cam Newton was a completely different beast. But I look at this situation and say, I feel like Bryce Underwood had a lot of success as a true freshman quarterback. You know, and so when I look at him, I do think he's going to make a lot of plays. He's going to like make a lot of big-time throws. He's going to run the football with high efficiency. He's going to pick up first downs. He's going to throw some immaculate touchdowns. However, with all of this being said, Joe, he's going to also make colossal mistakes. And when you go through the path that Tennessee is going through, you're going to have to be okay with some of these colossal mistakes he's going to have. We are so quick to rip off the Band-Aid and say, oh, this guy's not any good. He's a true freshman. Who cares? He's a number three overall player on 24/7's rankings. It doesn't matter. He should be better than what he is. I remind people that Trevor Lawrence struggled out of the gate. I remind people that it took an insane defensive effort for that team to win multiple games in that situation, and I don't think Trevor Lawrence stunk at all. So I look at this and say, I agree with you. He's got a big arm. The weight thing has been something that's been talked about on Vols 24/7. Ben McKee and the gang do a massive job I love reading it, especially during baseball. I don't think anybody covers Tennessee better than Ben McKee and the gang over there at Vols 24/7. But you're going to have to live with some of the growing pains, and that is what he's going to have. Again, if you stay the path with him, if you stay the path with a lot of these young guys on the offensive side of the football that you have, I mean, you go into next season with Sanders and TK Keys and all these guys, the sky can be the limit for you. But you're going to go through some bumpy patches, and that is okay. And you're going to have to allow him to make some bad decisions and bad throws. But in the bad decisions and bad throws are going to come absolutely elite, elite situations that he is going to bring you. And that is excited. That's what I am excited to see from him this season, because I think he's going to do that.
So to define what I think success is, to answer your question,
I know
you were being rhetorical in asking that question, but to provide an answer, one that I'm sure that Tennessee fans might not exactly love hearing this, success for Faison Brandon, because he's a true freshman quarterback, is that he plays effectively enough that he is not the reason that they lose multiple games. There probably will be a game where we look at it and go, man, Faison Brandon was not ready for this. Mm-hmm. Has a bad late interception, has a bad late turnover, whatever it is. As long as that doesn't happen on a recurring basis, as long as he doesn't look overwhelmed, and I think for the team as a whole, success would be, like, great success would be 9 wins in my eyes.
Oh.
A successful season would probably be 8. And a season that you'd be satisfied with would probably be 7. You're playing a 9-game SEC slate. It's going to be a tough year. One thing that I found interesting, Patrick Brown wrote this piece that was published at the time the news came out that highlighted Heupel's history with freshman quarterbacks. Some of these guys, actually, I think all of these guys were redshirt freshmen, but it would have worked if this was McIntyre. But at least paints the picture that Heupel's done this before, and he's gotten the most out of practically all of these guys. 2007, when he was the Oklahoma quarterback coach with Sam Bradford, he had a 69% completion percentage, 3,100 yards, 36 touchdowns, 8 picks. They won the Big 12 that year. 2009 with Landry Jones, he was not as good, 26 touchdowns, 14 interceptions, 58% completion percentage, but he went on to be the most prolific quarterback in Oklahoma history in terms of statistics with yards, passing touchdowns, 300-yard games. By the way, did you know that Landry Jones was on the Tennessee staff? Did you know this?
I did not know that, no.
I found that when I was reading an article. I was like, is that the Landry Jones? And I looked it up, and he's an analyst on the staff. Two other guys, Dylan Gabriel at UCF, threw for 3,600 yards, 29 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. They went 10-3 in his redshirt freshman season. We know that he went on to be a Heisman finalist and an All-American. And the last one was probably the least successful in terms of statistics, but the most successful in terms of destination, with Nico throwing for 2,600 yards, 19 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, and getting to the CFP, ultimately losing.
Would you take that?
I would take that.
Stats, because I'd take them right now.
I think that that's a good season, and I would actually make the argument, Blake, even though Nico was up and down that year, Nico had probably one of the better games out of any of his teammates against Ohio State.
Yeah,
am I crazy?
No, you're right. I mean, hell, people forget how good of a runner he was in that game. Remember, his helmet got cracked, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that if that came to fruition, that would be amazing. But for anyone who wants to look at that as the example of we can get to the playoff, we did it with Nico. The difference is that your defense that year was unbelievably good, and you had Dylan Sampson. Well, I think that Bishop is a really good running back, and he could be productive within this offense. I don't have that same fear of your defense like I did a few years ago when you reached the CFP. So that's why 8 wins has been the projection. I think it's accomplishable. And absolute best case scenario where Faison Brandon's better than Nico, you can potentially win 9 games.
I'm not going to go there because, again, I think that, you know, so to answer my own question, for me, for Faison Brandon, it has absolutely nothing to do with wins or losses. Maybe you can say what I'm about to say is about losses. Don't lose the game. Understand, and I think Heupel's got to understand too, how simplified do you get things? You know, Joe, I mean, I know you watch, because you're a psychopath like I am. I know that you watch a lot of NFL preseason games. How many times did Stetson Bennett or Ty Simpson, or you name the young quarterbacks, like I was watching Kansas City, they're doing play action bootlegs. They're making them read half the field. Hey, we want to see if you can make just easy, precise decisions. Are they going to do that for Brandon early on in the year? How simplified do you need to get? And B, I think your left side of that offensive line is pretty elite, to be honest with you, with Sanders and company. I think they're going to have to lean on this defense and run game early. Just don't put him in situations where you're asking him to go win you a game. Because, Joe, if they get in a slugfest and FaZe and Brandon's having to get in, this is ultimately why Michigan like lost to Texas. This is ultimately why Michigan a year ago lost to Oklahoma. Joe, when they had to get into slugfest and scoring fests, you're asking Bryce Underwood to do something that, quite honestly, he wasn't ready for. And that's not a shot at him. He's not – why should he be? Again, we have to – you know, the saying of like – I'm not even going to go there. We need to allow quarterbacks to be able to develop and sometimes develop in front of our eyes. I will remind people, there was a quarterback who we saw – and by the way, he won a Heisman – but people forget how, like, even guys like Tim Tebow, we even remember – I mean, do you remember Johnny Manziel? Because Johnny Manziel is a first-time starter, although was transcendent, he lost a lot of those games, right? Like, he lost them a lot of those games early. So, again, I just throw out to say that for me, if you have Nico's stats, like 2,500 yards, 17 to 19 touchdowns, 5 interceptions – and you're moving the chains and not taking bad sacks and making right reads, that is a success for me as you start learning and understanding. Now, for a guy that talented, I hope that we see some kind of explosion after week 6, week 7, and he starts developing. He's got his, you know, he's got his feet up under him and he's really moving. But he is as talented, and this is what we didn't really talk about the most. He's as talented a quarterback physically in the country as you're going to find. Yeah. So, again, I think Heupel is saying, look, man, we've got a lot of young talent. So what if we go 8-4? And can I be completely blunt with you? The first thing that came to my mind, it wasn't that he was talented. It wasn't that he's got a big arm and that he can move. It's that, well, Josh Heupel's back next year. Because if they, I mean, because you're not going to, if this kid shows any form of ability, you're going to want to let that build. So again, It's the right move. It's the smart move. And be realistic. And Tennessee fans were even realistic with Nico. We got to give that to him. Be realistic about what you need to see here. So we'll find out.
Yeah, I think that you hit that last part spot on, that this kind of guarantees it does give a little bit of an extra cushion to Heupel, because there can be growing pains. They were navigating a unprecedented situation that hopefully never, ever happens again. Actually can't happen again because the spring portal window is no longer a thing. But
is it? We just moved it to a summer portal window. Sorry to go back down that rabbit
hole.
As
much as you and I have talked about this stuff and said that people are misunderstanding it, we should never have this whole training camp thing ever again. This is only a one-time thing because of the NCAA's mishandling.
Yeah, I was just trying to make a very.
I know.
All right, let's move forward here. Not the only quarterback or QB1 name that was announced today of the former SEC East teams is Aaron Filo is going to be, or was announced per John Summerall, to be the quarterback one. Joe, we talked about this last week, right, in camp intel. John Summerall goes to the podium. I mean, he didn't sugarcoat it. I mean, he basically said, hey, I feel like Philo's here. I feel like Tramell Jones is here, and they're both rising. This is kind of like, yeah, duh to me when I heard Philo after listening to John Summerall a week ago. What are your thoughts of Philo being announced as Florida's quarterback one?
So Zach Goodall of Swamp 24/7 pointed this out, and it made me kind of tilt my head and go, "What? Huh?" Like, I had to keep rereading this, and it shifted my entire perspective on this quarterback battle. And I'm going to need you to please tell me if I am being off base for this. I do not think that is the case.
I think I know the headline what you're talking about, but continue.
This is the headline from Goodall. It's just operational. why Aaron Filo will start for Florida in week one. So the whole premise of this piece that I read earlier from Goodall, which was great work by him to highlight a number of things, was that Buster Faulkner's understanding of the offense gave
you
him
mean
the edge.
Filo's understanding.
Filo, sorry.
Yeah.
Filo's understanding of the offense, Buster Faulkner's offense, gave him the edge in this quarterback battle.
Yep.
And the more that I started to think about this, the more that I realized that this is illogical. This was a waste of everybody's time. Like, if Aaron Filo was going to win this race purely because of the fact that he understood the offense better, why was there a quarterback battle?
Mm-hmm.
Why did you waste practices using multiple quarterbacks with the first team when you could have been developing chemistry with Filo as that first team QB? You've got a ton of great weapons. You know that you can be explosive through the air and on the ground. There's the fun wildcat package that we talked about last week with Jaden Ball. I hope he gets to throw some passes. That's going to be fun as hell. But
3 for 15 in high school, Joe. Don't forget.
Yeah, man. Blake, Filo was always going to have a better understanding of the offense. He ran the offense for multiple years at Georgia Tech. Hence why he came with Faulkner. He was Faulkner's guy. Why did you waste our time? Why did you waste Tramell Jones's time? And why did you waste Aaron Filo's time not making this decision sooner? If it was so tight and you were going to end up making that move, there was going to be no way that Tramell Jones was going to catch up that quickly and pass him after playing in the system for multiple years. So, like, I'm a little bit kind of miffed by this because that doesn't make any sense to me. Maybe I'm reading into this way too much, but that is really, really silly if that was what it came down to.
So can I give my – so I knew that you were going to bring this up because the truth of the matter was is that I just – I had a very strong inkling of a feeling that me and you read the same thing from Goodall. I think it's because when you have a brand new coach that's bringing in so much new, you don't always want to overturn the apple cart, right? Meaning, I know that Jones played against FIU. He had to come in versus Kentucky. And I think what happened here is that Jones went off in the spring, especially in that spring game, and you couldn't go out there and say, after Filo just threw two interceptions, you couldn't go out there and say, hey, guys, he won the job, because fans would have been like, dude just threw two picks. So you're right on if this was inevitably going to be what you did, why didn't you do it? Now, you can make the argument, too, that John Summerall was trying to push Aaron Filo and say, hey, this kid's very talented, so you better pick it up. But this is as, yeah, no duh, as a announcement for me. They were always going to have to go here. You don't bring a kid over in this scenario, in this situation, who does know the offense and not give him the first chance because he knows all the intricacies. Joe, I go back to this, and this was the moment that I knew last week that Summerall was going to name Filo, and it wasn't even close. It's when he stated in no so uncertain terms, and I'm paraphrasing, but that Tramell Jones needs to be better at getting in and out of the huddle and getting guys in and out of position. And when he said that Filo doesn't struggle with that, what do you think defensive coaches want their offense to see? I mean, offensive coaches are pretty lenient on, okay, hey, you got to get this guy over here. Let's make the adjustment, you know, and work through it. Where defensive coaches are like, quarterbacks, you need to know this. I just think that right now that he's going to give you the best chance to win early. However, Joe, I think he's got a short leash. I think Summerall will pull him as quickly as possible if things turn sideways. And Tramell Jones will get a shot. I don't think that this is over with. I feel like that for me, in listening to him, who he does not pull punches, this feels more formality to me. Feels more like, hey, I brought over Buster Faulkner. He brought his guy. He says he wants him. Let's see how it goes out. But you got a short leash, and if you continue to turn the ball over, I will pull your ass. So that's how I feel in reading the situation. However, He's got a lot of big time weapons. And the thing that I have been kind of really wondering with Buster Faulkner, is it because maybe at Georgia Tech, Haynes King wasn't the best of passers? Is that why you didn't throw the ball as much? But brother, you got weapons on top of weapons at Florida. And I do think the best thrower of the football needs to play. Can Philo be that guy? I don't know. But I do think that he's got a short leash, and I do believe that John Summerall will pull his ass if things turn sideways quickly, because I do think Tremell Jones has got a lot of ability.
I don't think that – I think actually you have that aspect of it. I think you're spot on there that because it's tight, this is now that this has been decided, if there is any hiccup and there is any bit of – it just doesn't hit the stride that it should, knowing that there are – quality players at receiver, guys that can be top receivers in the SEC. You have a top five running back that you're handing the ball off to. If this does not operate explosively and as smoothly as possible, then yeah, Tremell Jones, it's been talked about multiple times throughout this process that he has been making waves and he has been rapidly improving and catching up. Still was never going to catch up to Philo for how long he's been in the system, but I feel like Jones is good enough that he could end up stealing this job at some point. So I agree with that aspect of things. But you also bring up a really good just point here that Philo can't have an excuse. It kind of made me think of the Auburn offense last year. The Auburn offense was loaded. They had a decent offensive line. They had elite receiver talent. They had Eric Singleton, who's now a part of this Florida offense. Good running back room. And Jackson Arnold, it was so clear that the kid could not capitalize on the talent that was around him. We're going to know immediately from the jump if Philo is good enough to lead this team. We're going to know right off the bat if he is capable of getting the most out of this unit, because if they're sputtering just a little bit, he's not going to have an excuse. He's got every single big play threat that he can connect with at every layer of the field. Mm-hmm. There needs to be, I think, if there's confidence in Philo, or even if they do turn things over to Jones at some point, you're going to know for sure if you have a guy that's worth building around more than other offenses because of the talent that is available to them at every single skill position.
Look, again, the last time that we saw Philo in any meaningful action, he went 21 of 28 for 373 with a touchdown and an interception versus Gardner Webb. Gardner Webb sucks. I mean, I hate to say it like that. I don't think Aaron Philo is as bad of a passer as maybe some think that he is. He also is still a young quarterback. We will see how this transpires here, Joe. But for me, I don't believe that this is over with yet. And you have a lot of talent around you offensively. Again, you know, Joe, I've heard a lot talked about like first-year head coaches. Like there's some pressure on maybe Matt Campbell because of an easy schedule. Lane Kiffin's got a lot of pressure. I'm trying to think of some new coaches. Like, I mean, there's this well, you can talk about coaches that aren't in their first year. Sark's got a lot of pressure. Lincoln Riley, who we'll talk about today, has got a lot of pressure. I got an honest question for you. With a top five running back in the sport and that talent that you have at wide receiver, why isn't John Summerall? Because I can make the argument that, hey, man, you got dudes on the outside. You have a moderately decent offensive line. You have a damn good running back. I mean, you better get to eight wins. You better get there because you have a crap load of talent. You brought a lot of kids in from the portal. A lot of kids returned on that defense. One thing you can't say about Billy Napier, and I think that this is to some extent with some of these coaches that got fired this past year, whether it's James Franklin, Brian Kelly, Billy Napier, there was still a lot of talent left over on those rosters, a lot. And Florida falls into that category. So, again, I think Florida's going to be a good team. They're kind of my quote-unquote dark horse because they have so much talent in the SEC. We got to see what Philo can be, but I'm going to continue to believe in my mind that this is a short leash, and, well, we'll just go ahead and see. All right, let's move forward here. Speaking of pressure, boy, I don't know if there's anybody on the West Coast that has more pressure than this guy. Lincoln Riley and USC, it's game week for the Trojans. Joe, how about that? But we're not going to talk about the game. I guess we can kind of preview a little bit of the game, maybe some things that we're looking forward to seeing with Southern California. But we have some camp intel coming out of Southern California. Joe, I ask you, what are you hearing? What are you seeing? What are you reading? What are you thinking coming out of Los Angeles with USC as they start the season this week?
Yeah, one thing that really caught my attention, first of all, where I know that we're going to get to, Jakeem Stewart missing time with an injury really sucks, because he was a guy that you and I both coined as a breakout candidate for college football just in general as a whole, not just for USC, but as a guy that we saw having that talent that he could just explode and then becoming one of the best interior just defensive linemen in the country. So losing him sucks because he was going to be a reason to buy into this defense. But when I was reading over at uscfootball.com, which is actually the 24/7 sports website, it's hilarious that is the name of the site because of it, how specific it is. But it was really notable to me, an emphasis from some of their practice reports, the depth that they noticed on both lines of scrimmage. And this is another example of when we've done these intel segments where I've gone and read and I've done digging on learning about some of these teams. And the things that I have projected in our previews where I've said, hey, I feel like USC has way more talent on their offensive and defensive line than people realize. Or like last week when I said, Chris Cole is going to be a dude for Georgia, watch out. And then all the reports are Chris Cole is unblockable in practice. So to see this makes me feel vindicated in my projection, because I liked Noah and Paige on their offensive line. And I liked the pieces that they had on their D-line in their full rotation, not just their front unit. Losing Stewart sucks, but it feels as though that there is still an emerging group that can fit on this team and can help them succeed. And I think that the most telling part about this, and this isn't BS and just being stated, like, it was more than obvious over the past 2-3 years that they lacked, seriously lacked depth. Not like, oh, they were a little thin. No, they really lack depth on both lines of scrimmage. So for this to be a reported upon thing during camp on 24/7 Sports shows to me that there is a very, very noticeable difference. When you see that difference, when you're on a team that's got a great O-line and you're used to seeing a team that doesn't have that, it really, really stands out. So I think that that is a driving force for my belief that USC gets the playoff this year.
They very well could. And again, somebody else that's standing out for USC has been Cam Crawford, the other edge guy who last year, who started it a little bit more than half the season, had 10 and a half tackles for loss. Joe had 5.5 sacks. I do think that Lincoln has done a very good job overall of secretly rebuilding. Now, the biggest thing that I've been monitoring when it comes to USC, Booby Feaster, hello. Like, I mean, first off, your nickname is Booby, so you're 100% going to get my attention. But secondly, have you seen all these videos that keep emerging out of Southern Cal of Booby Feaster? I mean, he is going off. I mean, he is going plumb off. The thing that is interesting with me with USC, I know there's a lot. You talked about Paige. It seems that this defense and offensive lines, as most camp intels will tell you, are really battling. Joe, they had the number one overall recruiting class. And you have guys like Max. You have guys like Booby. Are they going to be able to replace and do some special things will be my question. And we get to find out this week. You know, the thing that I think that caught my eye in reference to asking some questions around this USC team is just the overall level of depth that they've probably not had, as you brought up. God bless me. Sorry, I had to sneeze.
God bless you. I didn't know what was going on.
Oh, I sneezed. So you ever just get like, you know that you probably need to sneeze for like 30 minutes and then it finally just, whatever. But it is the depth level. Okay, when you look at this USC roster as an example, especially on the defensive side of things, Joe, they have 4-star freshmen, 5-star freshmen, 5-star freshmen, 4-star freshmen, 5-star sophomore, 5-star sophomore, 3-star sophomore, 4-star sophomore, all in there 2 deep. So on the defensive side of things, they've really reloaded. Now, Van Summerlin Can he get moving along that interior defensive line? You bring back Shelby. You have Crawford. You have Bryant that you got from the portal. My question is, Joe, is finally are they going to be able to get the stops defensively that they need? Because if they can, I do think Maiava, I do think this run game with a really good offensive line can get some things going. USC and the Big Ten might be the most intriguing team because, look, they do have a very difficult schedule. But I think everything coming out of camp for them is what you want to hear. Hey, you brought in a lot of five-star talent as freshmen. They're making waves. You're really good on both lines of scrimmage. Finally, guys on the defense, when you brought in DeAnton Lynn and he brought these guys in, these guys are starting to develop. You have really good tackle play. Your quarterback has taken another step. You got two good running backs. You got a damn good tight end. I mean, it's what you want to hear. The question is and kind of I don't want to do this and kind of get out of camp intel, but I want to see how much this depth in week zero really takes hold for them, right? Like, are they able to really put the pedal to the metal and roll out guys in there will be the question for me. But, look, USC under Lincoln Riley, I think his biggest bugaboo has been, really and truthfully, Joe, depth along both lines of scrimmage. Let's see if they got it.
Right. I think that is like where my eyes immediately went to, and it's exciting to hear that proof for them being successful this year. Because, like, I don't have any worry about what they're going to do on offense. Anything that you read about Jaden Maiava, yeah, the kid was great last year. He was the most efficient quarterback in the country. He's number one in EPA per dropback. I feel like I've said that 100 times this offseason. Right. Yeah, I keep bringing it up every time I talk about him. Tanuk Hines is really good, and it's been reported upon that they're trying to figure out the wide receiver room, but I trust Lincoln Riley to figure out what that rotation is going to look like and who is going to emerge as key players. The last time that they did this with unknown receivers, it was Jacoby Lane, or not unknown, but receivers that didn't have production. It was Jacoby Lane and Mekhi Lemon, and those guys went on to be fantastic. One of them got picked in the first round. The other one is killing it in Ravens minicamp or training camp, excuse me. So I'm not worried about the receiver stuff, but you brought up the freshman aspect of this, and that was the other thing that I made note of, was that, you know, Riley talked about that they're going to have freshmen that have key roles. And I don't think that this is your typical circumstance where, oh gosh, we have to put a freshman out there, we're screwed.
No, they're winning the job.
Right. Their recruiting class that they had for their freshmen, like what they have on this roster available to them, it's going to be nuts, some of these players that step onto the field. We've talked about a lot of freshmen as potential big-time playmakers, and I think that the obvious ones are Mark Bowman at tight end, who we've hyped up. And the other one I'm really intrigued by that I think fills the depth is Luke Wayful, the New Jersey kid who came in at defensive line here for this USC defense, the five-star. Both those guys feel like that they're primed and set up to be super disruptive. And we'll be talking about them at the end of the year saying, man, if they didn't have those kids, who knows if we'd be talking about USC the way that we've been talking about them all season long.
Probably wouldn't. Again, it goes to the level of depth. Again, the big thing for them, we find out this week. And again, camp is over for them. They are in prep and they are in game week. I will be keeping a lot of close eyes on USC. I know that you will be as well. But again, which one of these freshmen stand out? Is it Bowman? Is it Booby Feaster? I mean, is this edge room going to be what we think it is going to be? Joe, what are the ripple effects of DeAnton Lynn? I get that he's no longer there, but what are the ripple effects of how he's rebuilt that defense? Is that front seven ready to go? Is this run game? Because, again, if you can control the line of scrimmage, I just feel like last year they couldn't get the stops that they needed. Again, you're a stop away from Illinois. You're a stop away from Notre Dame. That if you're able to get this year, Joe, the sky is the limit for them. And you talk about them being a playoff team, I'm right there with you. They definitely can do it. And Lincoln really needs it. That is for sure.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap the show up here. Joe, we continue on our path of week one games. Blake, it's not week one yet. Well, we got a lot that we need to get into. Boise versus Oregon, week one college football. Joe, what are your thoughts going into the game, Boise State versus Oregon? I'll remind everybody, last year, or 2 years ago, everybody freaked out over this game because, well, came down to a field goal.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts of Oregon versus Boise State, and how do you see this one playing out?
Well, this game a couple of years ago that was quite defining because it was something that was brought up constantly when discussing Oregon and how good they actually were. And it was brought up often to depict and show how good Boise State was and why they deserved to be where they were. Here's the key important thing, Blake. Ashton Jeanty's on the Las Vegas Raiders. And Maddox Madsen, since losing Ashton Jeanty, who is the starting quarterback still for Boise State, had a significant drop-off in his production when he lost Jeanty. And I think that this is the first big key thing here, why we just need to quickly move on and establish Boise State's not going to be much of a threat. They're not going to take Oregon down to the wire unless Oregon is completely and utterly asleep. Madsen dropped from 3,000 yards.
They had a problem starting the season off slow.
They have, and they played Idaho a little close a couple years ago as well. I think that when you're in year two with Dante Moore, 2 years ago, it was your first year with Dylan Gabriel. It was a little understandable that you were going through some rough patches. But Madsen went from 3,000 yards, 23 touchdowns, and 6 interceptions to 2,300 yards, 18 touchdowns, and 9 interceptions. Most importantly, he played awful against Notre Dame and Washington. His combined stat total, 6 interceptions, 0 touchdowns. They lost Ty Benefield. They also are...
Yeah, they did.
They lost Ty Benefield, who's a great player. They lost a couple of key guys on defense. They're 90th in defensive line snaps. They are 85th in linebacker snaps, 129th in safety snaps. They're 116th in wide receiver snaps. This is a team that does not have very much experience. Jaden Virgin Morgan and Max Stieg are really good on their defensive line, but I think just very plainly and simply, Oregon fans have zero reason to fear this Boise State squad. The more digging I did into this team, the more that I realized this is a solid Boise State team that should win the Pac-12 and could go to the playoff, but they are not the same Boise State team that we were talking about a couple of years ago that legitimately had draftable pieces aside from Ashton Jeanty.
Did we know Ashton Jeanty was Ashton Jeanty until Ashton Jeanty was Ashton Jeanty?
Yeah, but I'm not expecting Jericho
That's a mouthful right there. Did we know that Ashton Jeanty was Ashton Jeanty until Ashton Jeanty was Ashton Jeanty?
I don't think Dylan Riley or Sire Gaines or Ashton Jeanty is what I meant to say.
I get what you're saying, and I don't disagree. Here's the thing that I think that Oregon wants to do. Now, I heard Dan Lanning's comments about not going after 2022 players. That might be the first lie he tells this offseason, but it won't be the last because the offseason's over with. But I'm with you. I do think that, and I wrote this down, I think their slow starts to seasons has been because you're breaking in new quarterbacks and you're not doing that again. The only question is, look, I have Oregon. So just before we get started and Oregon fans come in these comments and this chat and this clip video and start yelling at me, I have Oregon winning the national title and I have them as my number one overall team. So with that being said, I expect a lot from them. We don't come on here and say, hey, we're predicting a blowout. I mean, it's very few and far between that we do that. We have done that. We don't like doing that. However, I'm just having a hard time, like you. The more I look at Boise, the more I look at the pieces that they lost, Ty Benefield is a massive loss for them. A massive loss for them. Boise has not been able to regain and retool to the athletics pieces that they have or the development that they have. With that being said, I do think that they're still going to be a solid team and you can't play around with them. Oregon needs to go out there and make a statement. And going out there and making a statement, I want to see what your wide receiver room looks like with DK Moore and Evan Stewart and McClellan and what you have it tied in this run game. I consider you to have the best front seven in college football. You going to prove it? I mean, I'm not saying that you need to pull off a Texas Tech level performance here. It ain't too far off on the defensive side of the ball. Joe, I just think that this team is angry for whatever it's worth. They, as talented and as gifted as they are, they have a chip on their shoulder. And I got to be real with you. I think they're going to come out and make a complete statement. I think Dante Moore wants to make a statement, but there are things that I'm watching for. So I say all that because, and I wanted to make sure I prefaced all of this by saying, need to see how they look on offense. You have a new coordinator. Want to see how you look on defense, calling plays. Joe, this is the first time guys are calling plays, and you and I both know that it's not the easiest thing to do. And how quickly can these coordinators get their legs up under them? Oregon versus Boise is an interesting game. Not that I think that they can lose by any stretch of the imagination, but how diverse are they going to be and how angry are they going to be able to show that there is a chip on their shoulder and that they're going to overwhelm this team? I think they will do it. I think that as much as I said, I don't like coming on here and saying that there's going to be blowouts, I think that they're going to lean on them and it's going to get bad pretty quickly.
Right. As much as, you know, I spent that time acknowledging that there is not the same level of talent as Boise State had a couple of years ago when they went to the playoff, or at least known talent, because you're replacing so much, you're so inexperienced on defense, you're so inexperienced at receiver. Even with that being the case, Boise State still does present you with one of the tougher challenges that you're going to get from a G6 team. And I think that we already know where the talent lies. We already know that Oregon has a loaded roster. We have stated it on this show that we believe that they have the best roster in college football. But I'm really am focused on, like, what you talked about. The coordinator stuff is what I want to see in this game. How effective are they defensively? Is this a Chris Ash type of a circumstance? I remember against Purdue, Notre Dame gave up a lot of big plays for no reason, and Purdue sucked. Purdue was bad. Boise State probably beats Purdue. And I watched Notre Dame's defense that has like three guys that could go in the first round of this upcoming draft give up a ton of big plays because their scheme didn't make any sense. It was illogical. Are we going to get an early glimpse of that? Are we going to get a circumstance where Dan Lanning, theoretically, this is something we haven't talked about. Is this going to be like Marcus Freeman? Dan Lanning has to step in and help with the defensive game plan and the approach and how they're going about things. Or are they going to be fine? Is the hype around their offense and a new approach there? Is it warranted? Are they going to be explosive right off the bat? Is this going to be a game that's over before it even starts? I want to see if that comes to fruition early. How a game like Boise State, Blake, is a really good opportunity to get a really nice feel for how good a team can be for the upcoming year when you had so much change at both coordinator spots. And I think that if there are no hiccups, it at least makes you feel secure until that first big matchup.
I know we kind of have some breaking news here, but I want to finish this up before we get rolling. I think Oregon's going to roll, and I think that they're going to come out and make a statement. Here's my hot take. That offensive line's going to be better than people imagine, and they're going to lean on this team. I think that they're going to show a lot of explosiveness at the wide receiver core with two freshmen that are now sophomores, Iverson Hooks. I know they got Lott. You talk about Evan Stewart. I think they're going to be great there. I think this defense is going to lean on them. Joe, I think because of the experience in bringing all these guys back, they're better defensively. Joe, I really expect a better performance offensively while having a Texas Tech-level dominance on defense. And I think that that's fair. I think they're going to roll. Do you have some early communication problems? That's every time that happens in the early part of season. So if they do give up a score and Boise does score, I'm just going to chalk it up to, hey, early season. But I hate doing this. I really do hate doing this. I just don't see a world. Like, this isn't the multiverse. We're not talking about Marvel. You know, the Avengers Doomsday's right around the corner. We're not going to the multiverse here. The multiverse is we're in Earth 616, and this team in Oregon's about to blow them out. That's just how I feel. They're really good. They're the most talented team, in my opinion, on all phases. When you combine this team together, I think they're going to dominate, Joe.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's safe to say. I know exactly what you want to get to. Do you want to get on this before you get to Super Chats?
I do think that we need to get to this before we get to Super Chats. So the Southeastern Conference has come out with a statement saying with the presidents and I'll just read the whole thing. After Monday evening's video teleconference with the presidents and chancellors of the Southeastern Conference, here is our official statement. College athletes, not former professional athletes, have been at the heart of the Southeastern Conference. Individuals who choose to leave college athletics, sign professional playing contracts, and complete professionally should not be permitted to return to college competition. Allowing that to occur will blur the lines between the college and professional sports. create significant competitive equity concerns, and reduce opportunities for high school and current college athletes. College sports is for college athletes. The current confusion around the national eligibility standards emphasizes the need and why we need to advance the Protect College Sports Act. Joe, can I tell you what this pretty much states here?
Yeah.
In my opinion, what it states to me is we disagree with everything that's going on, but there's not a damn thing that we can do about it.
Yep. Yeah, this doesn't change anything.
This doesn't change a damn thing. There's
they
nothing
to say that they're punishing do. LSU. They're not saying that these players are ineligible. They're basically, it is a performative hand wave by Greg Sankey. We're not cool with this, but we can't do anything about it.
Well, you want to hear something? You want to hear something absolutely hilarious? Mm-hmm. The SEC just made that statement. Breaking. A Louisiana judge has granted R.J. Lewis an injunction, paving him the way to play for LSU basketball this season. There's just not a damn thing that they're going to be able to do about it. So, I mean, basically, in theory, the SEC has just come out with a statement while we're live on the show saying that, hey, we don't agree with it. But, Joe, they're admitting that there's nothing that they could do, because here's the thing. If they could do something and would do something, they would have said it in this release. They would have said it in this release.
Right. I think that's the key, is that if there was a punishment coming, there would have been one that was delivered. So, again, this is performative. But, see, I was fully ready when I saw the update. I was fully ready to come in here and say, if they were delivering some sort of a verdict, like they're not eligible. I actually was really quick and ready to say, good on Sankey for actually setting the table for conference enforcement and holding teams accountable for things that they don't deem healthy for the sport. But this doesn't do anything.
Well, everybody gives Sankey the flowers. I see this comment, like Royal just said, so Sankey sent a letter regarding Bediako and went off, but this is okay. He did send a letter.
He sent a letter. If I recall correctly, he actually, it wasn't a testimony. There's another word for this. He sent it as part of the case. Sankey hasn't done that yet.
Hold on. Bediako didn't get approved because a judge deemed him ineligible. It wasn't because of Greg Sankey. A judge did not approve Charles Bediako to play, and that's why Charles Bediako didn't play. It had nothing to do with Greg Sankey.
Yeah, and I think that
the bargaining agreement, if these kids sue and get a TRO, there's nothing you can do about it.
And again, for the 100th time, it was really obvious what Bediako was doing. What Bediako did was so different than what is happening with Daquan Wright and Xavier Harris and all these other guys. And it also does not open the door for this to happen for multiple years. It is literally just a small subset of guys that would not have made NFL rosters that should have been allowed to play college football this upcoming year. I don't even know anymore. I want this to be over so bad. I don't know anymore.
This is insane. We're in weird times. Elk says Ian Moore at left tackle, Sarah at right guard, his natural position. I used to pray for times like this. Also, Brock Boyd, quote unquote, white boy with motion.
Yeah, I'm curious to see Ian Moore. When I was watching, I forget which game it was. It might have been the Miami game or the Indiana game. And when he stepped onto the field, I was pretty intrigued by the way that he was playing. He's got some pretty good tools. Big, tall, tackle. They finally have their group figured out. It should be good for Ohio State.
He also says, does the SEC interconference transfer ban affect LSU? No, they just stated there's nothing they can do about it. And by the way, Ryan Day said he's going to do it. All right. You ready? Me and Matt Zinnage have been breaking news. You ready for it? Ryan Day was trying to go after a couple of these players. You want to hear the truth? There you go.
Doesn't shock me.
No. And that's why he admitted it today. Underdog with a $5 super chat says, what is a very bold take that y'all have for the 26-27 season? Go ahead.
Mine's been Oklahoma makes the playoff and Mateer is going to be a Heisman finalist. Those have been my.
Is that really bold when they made the playoff a year ago?
I mean, I'm not going to just say anything random. I'm not just going to say something to say something. I think it's bold. I think
they made the playoff last year. That's
Fine Mom really said bold. That they're not. Fine Mom said they're going to suck this year.
I gotta be completely honest. As much as I'm so sick of the injunction talk. I'm more tired of people telling me what Paul Feinbaum said.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
He's been wrong at like literally every turn. Here's a bold prediction that I have had. The SEC and Big Ten do not have a national champion at the end of the year.
Wait, say that again?
The Big Ten nor the SEC will have a national champion in college football at the end of the 2026.
So it'll be Miami. Or Louisville.
Okay, or
Notre Dame.
There you go.
Go Irish. Notre Dame supporter. You're such a, Blake Ruffino.
You're such a homer. I mean, now that I don't have to defend Brian Kelly, I'm a great Catholic. I love Catholicism.
Sure.
By the way, I haven't decided this. I did take Kennesaw State all the way to the national title in college football 27. Marcus Freeman has been fired at Notre Dame in my dynasty.
So you took the Notre Dame job.
I haven't taken it yet. Should I take it?
I don't think you're ready to lead Notre Dame.
Just because you said that, I'm taking the job. It's over with. I'm taking the job.
All right,
we'll see you on Wednesday. Y'all have a good night. Peace.